We have an update on the NHK broadcast incident. So there was a English language Japanese broadcast. NHK, they do the news, and they do the news in multiple languages. One of the languages they do is English. They also do Chinese and Korean. It was a Chinese affiliate, so a contract worker, had been hired to do the news in English. He switched to Japanese. We actually have a couple details that I didn't have in the previous story. He switched from English to Chinese, and he said the Senkaku Islands belong to China. And he also said, don't forget comfort women or the Nanking Massacre. So this guy, I mean, that's a set of politically charged statements he's made. I don't actually necessarily disagree with the latter points. The Senkaku Islands, as far as I'm concerned, are in dispute. I'm not saying they are Japanese. I'm not saying they are China's. I have no idea. I'm not taking a stance on that. I don't know enough about international law. I do know this isn't what you say if you want to keep your job. The fallout from this, I thought, would, okay, contract worker, fire the contract worker. If you want to get really serious, you just get rid of the company and don't work with that company anymore. Like, that would be almost excessive. Like, fire that guy, yes. He hasn't done anything criminal, so that's enough. But it went way further than I would have expected it. As a result, the board of director in charge of foreign language broadcasts will step down to take responsibility, and three other executives will take a 50% pay cut. Now, that is significant punishment for something they didn't have any control over, really. They are technically responsible. And what I actually realized from this is the kind of level of responsibility I would like to see other executives and other companies held to. I don't know why these guys are being held to this standard and other executives and other companies are not. The president or CEO of one of these big tech companies or a gas and oil company, and they go and mess something up or they do something illegal, they should be punished. And I bet a lot of executives would be a lot more careful about how things go. And it would actually, in a weird way, give a lot of power to the people, because if you're an employee of one of these companies, you want to screw over your boss, you do something illegal, and he's going to get punished. And they would care a lot more. This is not an anti-upper class, billionaire class warfare podcast. But, I mean, let's face it, I'd like to see some of that happen in the world. McDonald's Japan. I don't go to McDonald's a lot, but I go to McDonald's. Convenience often overwhelms isn't overrides good decision-making. And let's face it, chocolate shakes are pretty good. Last time I went there, I noticed that my server had blue streaks in sort of blondish hair. So more blue than blonde. I think it was maybe a transitionary period between two colors. It was actually odd that I noticed that. I was like, why did I notice? I see girls with brightly colored hair all the time out in the streets. Why did I notice in a McDonald's? Because in McDonald's, I had a rule for many, many years, up until very recently, this is the story, that you could only have natural color hair. So if you had black hair, you could sort of take it down a couple shades to brown. If you had brown hair, you could, you know, darken it up to black, but it had to be a natural color. And I think when they say natural, what they mean is a natural sort of Japanese or Asian color. And then, you know, like, we need to hire more people and we want to hire young people, and young people are really the who we target. So let's relax this one standard and make it easier for people to apply, so you can keep your blue hair and join McDonald's. Well, this has had a very positive impact. They have had three times more recruits in the last year. And again, my server had sort of bluish, purplish anime hair, which didn't do anything for me. It was fine. She was very nice. I mean, she was a server. She was very nice. Didn't have a conversation. Didn't interact. This is fast food. We're not getting to know each other. Back in 2021, they started to allow beards, citing religious reasons. So they're saying, like, we don't want to discriminate against people who have a religious thing where they can't shave their beard. We want to be able to hire them too. Other companies have taken note of this kind of thing. Starbucks in Japan has relaxed their dress code, and it's called your preferred style. Now, my preferred style, probably still too lazy for, it would be just athletic wear, if I'm being really honest. I wear a lot of, like, track pants, sweatpants. It's a modern version. So it's not like sweatpants in the traditional sense. It's not track pants in the traditional sense. It's that new hybrid, sort of the Under Armour stuff. It feels like wearing pajamas all day. If I had the choice, I would be wearing athletic wear all day, not because I'm like a hyper athlete and want to be super athletic. It's just very comfortable. They are designed for comfort first and then form factor second, but they always look fine as well. Starbucks has relaxed their dress code to your preferred style. Sushiro is also being more relaxed. They haven't really clarified what that means, but these big companies are starting to notice almost if you make people happy, if you accept people, if you allow people to be who they are, you get more people who want to work at your company. Who would have thought it is really the question that needs to be thrown out there, except everyone who ever worked at a company. There was a trading card company, and the trading card company, they're doing a live stream. So they're like, let's open some trading cards. Let's put them on the screen. Let's talk about them, unboxing, maybe that kind of stuff. They're talking about special cards, rare cards. The thing is, this is a company. So it's basically advertising. No problem with that. You want to advertise your product. This is a very interesting way to do it. Get the people who are interested in trading cards watching your live stream, and they can learn about it. And then, of course, they're going to want to trade or buy with you. The difference is, like a live stream. So I'm live streaming this podcast right now. But the thing is, hopefully, no one knows where I live. So if I suddenly said, like, hey, here's something very valuable. What's something I just bought recently? This is the kind of advertising. I bought this Eisner Mile beard oil. It's a 5-pack. This is going to be like 5 years worth of beard oil right here. So let's say I hold that product up. I talk about it. You're like, ooh, it's worth millions of dollars. You don't know where I live. So you can't just come and like break into my house and steal it. If you're a business, on the other hand, you can look up where businesses are and you can go find them. You can see where this story is going. So they're like, hey, here's a card. This card's worth 1,000,000 yen. Here's a card. This card's worth 10,000 yen. So they have a pile of very valuable objects that they've just explained to you how valuable they are on the live stream. And then you can look up where they are. In a previous very similar story, said the problem with me stealing, let's say, rare Pokemon cards, I wouldn't know which ones are valuable. I wouldn't know which ones are the rare ones. I wouldn't know which cards to steal. If they had a live stream instructing me in which ones were valuable, that would make my job as the criminal a lot easier. So two men enter after the live stream ends. So they're probably standing outside, maybe on their smartphone or something, watching the live stream. And the live stream ends, and then they enter the room. There are two staff. They tie them up, and then they say, they came in. Oh, this actually is the bit that bothered me. So they tie up these guys, and they go, which ones are the valuable cards? Now, if you've been paying attention to the live stream, you would know which cards were valuable. So this is maybe, again, I look down on the criminal element because I look down on their planning. I think their planning is always poor. But here they are. These guys are delivering the information they need. They didn't pay attention, like they probably didn't pay attention in school. So they didn't learn what was valuable. So they had to waste time asking these guys they just attacked and tied up which ones are valuable. Good opportunity for them to lie to you, if I'm being really honest. They want to get just a little bit of revenge. This was clearly set up because this company was not just sort of out on the street. This company does trading online. So the company itself, like the office, is in an office building. So it's not like just a shop you walk into. They buy cards online. They sell cards online. It was mostly done through a website. So them doing a live stream made a lot of sense. These are like internet savvy people. But they hadn't taken into account the security of maybe needing to lock the door, which is something I think in a normal office you wouldn't really worry about because you wouldn't be thinking people are going to come and try to steal their stuff. They managed to steal over 10 million yen's worth of cards and 250,000 yen from the wallets of the people, the staff who were there. There's only two staff members, so I'm actually thinking these guys are carrying a lot of money. I should get into cards. I've just realized, although it probably goes bad as I went. Like I got into crypto. I like the concept of crypto, of course, but then it's crypto scams. I got scammed just enough for me to go, is this worth it? It's probably not. Clearly didn't negatively affect my lifestyle, but made me realize like, yeah, there's just scams everywhere. I just like the idea of digital money, internet money. I was looking for investments. I did a little bit of the money I had made as a profit. I invested that and then basically lost it all because it was a scam. It was like, of course it was, because everyone's scamming you all the time. So please be careful. And if you run a really successful trading shop online and have an office and do a live stream, lock your doors. There are two neighbors. It's always bad when you start with two neighbors. I guess the beginning of any story I'm doing on the podcast is going to be a problem. You're not getting on this podcast because something good happened or you did it. I've done good feel-good stories, but they're less interesting. I guess it's the salacious attitude of the internet, and I have it too. That's I pick the stories. So maybe if you went through all the stories back of Ninja News Japan, all 300 and whatever 20 some episodes, you'd get a pretty good idea of what is interesting me. But there is also the bit, like, sometimes I hold back. I'm like, ooh, that one maybe is too much, because I do want to talk about it and put it out there in the world. But this is a neighbors, and one has a cat named Tama, and one neighbor was complaining that the cat Tama, 3 years old, was willfully walking through his property. Now, here's already the first problem, is this man doesn't seem to understand that cats don't understand property lines. Cats don't willfully do anything. Well, I guess they willfully do everything and nothing at the same time. Cats are very zen in that way. The cat is just going to go where it wants, when it wants. It's not targeting you specifically yet. Cats can be smart enough to do that. Like, it realizes it's pissing you off, so it starts doing it. I could believe that. But if the cat is just walking across your lawn or walking in your backyard, it's probably not doing it to piss you off. It's just trying to get from A to B. The owner of Tama would let the cat out at 8 p.m. every night and just let it go roam around. It would come home every morning. And April 18th, the cat did not come back. So the guy is like, ah, someone's done something, and I know my neighbor hates my cat, so I'm really pissed off. So then he starts looking for his cat. The cat was chipped. On April 21st, the cat was found, given to like an SPCA, sort of a pound kind of situation. They scanned it, had the chip. So Tama was returned to the owner on April 30th. So from 18th to 30th, the cat was gone. So this guy's kind of losing it. He's suspicious because this cat was found 70 kilometers away. And the cat did not walk that far on its own. And the cat was able to go out every night and find its way home every night. So the cat was sort of had its sort of area. It was doing its little thing. It was going around doing patrols. I don't know what cats do at night, but it wasn't leaving so far that it would get lost or come back. Cats don't really tend to get lost. A video shows at 4:50 a.m. on April 15th that the neighbor picked the guy up, got in his car. And then the car, when you go onto the expressway, you have this little card and it logs you into the car, Also takes a picture when you pass through the gates. There's no sort of like, you're not really escaping if you're using the expressway. It logged him getting onto the expressway and then getting off 70 kilometers away, comes back, cat's not there. So then the police have seen A, video of the guy picking up the cat, B, video the same night, him getting onto the expressway. That's enough proof. He admits he does it. He gets arrested. This was interesting. Like, what do you get arrested for? For kidnapping? Because it's not a person. So it's not really kidnapping. Catnapping, weirdly, is not a crime. So I was very interested, more than anything else, what is the crime that he got arrested for? Well, they decided to do property damage because the cat is the neighbor's property. He's taken the cat willfully. So he has committed a property crime. So it's, I guess, mentally, physically, I don't know, some kind of damage to the cat, therefore it's property damage. So that was an interesting thing. The police wanted to arrest this guy, but they had to, like, there's not really like a cat napping law as such, so they had to find something else. That was an animal story. There's your feel-good stories. I mean, animals are cute. We do like animals. I like animals. Penguin escaped a zoo in Nagoya, so I actually work in Nagoya. It's a 6-year-old Cape penguin. What they were doing was they kind of like take the penguins out and they like take them into areas. And so they were on a beach and they had made this little shallow so the kids could come see the penguins out sort of in the wild. I know it's not really in the wild, but it's kind of in the wild in nature. But at Nagoya in the summertime, crazy hot, not like the Antarctic at all. So they dug a little pool in the ocean to keep the penguin cool. They put a net around it so the penguin couldn't escape. But of course, the whole point of this story is the penguin escaped. How far did the penguin get? This is, again, so the cat was stolen, kidnapped, brought 70 kilometers away. The penguin gets out, swims 30 kilometers up the coast over a couple of days. It escaped on August 25th. And it swam 40 kilometers along and then was found 30 kilometers away. So it's kind of swum up the coast 40 kilometers, got onto land, maybe walked back, swam back and forth a little bit. But of course, it's a little penguin. It's lost. Staff got a call. There's a penguin out here, clearly not native species of penguin because there's no penguins in Japan. So they call them staff approach. This is the thing I actually would have loved a recording of. Staff approach the penguin. They call the penguin by name. The penguin turns around and starts coming to them. I mean, that is just, I'm sorry. Even if I don't see it in my head, I can imagine it's the cutest thing ever. The penguin answers to his name. I got a dog behind me. If I called his name, he probably wouldn't answer. He'd probably just ignore me completely. This actually should have gone next to the card trading story because it does go into knowing or not knowing the value of something, and that's important. Five people were arrested for stealing golf clubs. And I don't know anything about golf clubs. I know golf clubs are expensive. Golf is an expensive sport, which is weird because it's grass in a stick. And then you hit a little ball into a hole. I mean, I could probably manufacture that at home. I know equipment is where men put their lives. I have, over the course of my judo career, had many judo suits. The most expensive one was probably $350 or $400. This is for very heavy pajamas that I will wrestle other men in. So I kind of get it. This is interesting because this is my level of expertise when it comes to judo suits. I could look at the judo suit and tell you basically how much that judo suit is worth because I've dealt with them so much. Golf clubs, completely alien to me, no idea what the value is. So you have to have a golf expert to steal golf clubs effectively. You need a card expert to steal cards effectively. So again, those guys should have paid attention to the live stream. That really bugs me. It really bugs me that they had to stop and ask the staff which are the valuable cards because they could have just been paying attention the whole time. Otaki is one of the guys who got arrested, one of these five guys in this sort of like golf club stealing scam thing. Basically, they were going into parking garages, I assume close to...
I like that you call them judo suits.
They are judo suits. Isn't that... Well, I mean, I guess the Japanese is judo gi, but in English, gi, I don't know. It's not really... there's not really a thing. Judo suit. Yeah, put on my judo suit, my little judo tie. I want to look correct for when I go.
Like a custom suit, you still do judo in.
I would love that. I actually had the idea. What I wanted to do, like, is a John Wick kind of thing. So I wanted to just take one of my regular work suits. So they're pretty good. I spent a little extra money. I got, like, an actual tailored suit, bespoke. If I go to a tailor shop in Japan, the shoulders are never big enough. They cut from a pattern. I had to go to a place that actually made the suit. So it's not because I'm fancy. It's because just the Japanese tailoring system is already set for a certain size. So I went and got these suits made, and I was like, you know what would be awesome is if I put on my suit and I got my opponent to put on his suit and we did a real fight and see how much physical damage was actually done to the suit by the end of the fight. It would be really interesting. I actually had the idea because they have these old kung fu movies and they wear like these pajamas, like these like sequin pajamas, and I wanted to put on one of those and have a real fight and see how long they last. I think officially you call it a judo gi, yes. I kind of translate a lot of Japanese for what I assume. I know my audience is like 70-80% in America. We get some Europeans. We get some, what was it? I think it was Estonia suddenly became like really bumped up. I forget the country now. There was a very unusual country for listening to Japanese news just popped up out of nowhere in the last month or so. But, it, you know, hello, Estonia. Thanks for listening. I had a tailored judo gi. Like, I hit that level where I was like getting it made for me. But again, totally unrelated. But it's the knowing. I should look it up, make sure I got the country right. I don't want to insult the country, but I could just say thank you to all the countries. My favorite. So you look at stats. If you do like a podcast, you have to look at stats because numbers make you feel good when the numbers go up. The problem is when the numbers plateau or go down, you feel bad. So you shouldn't invest yourself too much in the numbers because they don't always go up. But I do always weirdly enjoy, it'd be like, let's just say the Philippines or Singapore or something, and you'll get one listen and then no more. So it's someone in Singapore was like, oh, here's an interesting news show about Japan. I'll listen to that. And then they listen to it and they go, eh, not for me. And they never listen again. You get one download from Romania, one download from Mexico, one download from, you know, whatever country. But it shows like someone gave you a shot. And I'm like, hey, I appreciate you gave me a shot. And you gave me like a real shot. That's great. And then it wasn't for you. I understand that. It's not for everybody. But I do appreciate everyone who's listened to one episode. They're not going to hear this. They're not going to hear this. Thanks. So honestly, go fuck yourself. Otaki referred to himself as the golf club thief. So if you're giving yourself that name, you're actually kind of giving away what's going on. He specifically targeted valuable head covers. I assume that's the end. Again, we've already hit a level where I don't really know what I'm talking about. And he sold them at retail shops. So he went to parking garages, found cars with the clubs in the back, broke into the car, took the golf clubs, and then resold them. I'm assuming that was either around golf courses or he knew where people were parking. There was a very set way he was doing it. He did. This is actually where it gets impressive, though. He did 286 thefts across 7 prefectures in 4 months. So this was a man who was working. So I do, again, make fun of criminals a lot. I say they're not doing their job right. This guy was doing the work. He probably, the literal volume was actually his mistake, because what you need to do is commit a crime once. It's a big crime. And then you stop for a really long time. So you don't get, you don't make mistakes. If you have to keep committing crimes and you do it again and again and again and again, you're going to make enough mistakes. They're going to put together an MO and they're going to catch you. So the 286 thefts sounds good, but at the end of the day, it's too many because they're going to catch you. That is more than two a day. But the golf clubs he stole were worth over 57 million yen. Now, he probably didn't get 57 million yen for them because he was selling them at pawn shops, resale shops, things like that. But he was making a lot of money. Why did he steal this many? There was 5 guys, though. He had to split it up. So that would have been 10 million yen each, maybe. The police arrested him. They're like, dude, why are you stealing golf clubs? And seriously, why are you stealing them at this volume? When he was arrested, he said he was stealing the golf clubs to raise money for a celebration because of a friend's release from prison. So his friend's going to get out of prison. He's like, oh, we got to get some money so we can put on like just a killer party for our boy who's getting out of prison. I know what to do. Let's go steal golf clubs and sell them and we'll get a ton of money. How much money do you need for a party, though? I've never been to a 57 million yen party. I guess I'm just not running with the right crowd. I also don't, if I got out of prison, would my friends throw me a 57 million yen party, a release party? The irony is this man is very, very likely going to jail for the money he was trying to raise for his party. The manager of Crocodile Tanning. That was enough. Crocodile Tanning already put me off because I am incredibly fair-skinned. I burn in minutes if I'm in the sun. So tanning is like a torture chamber for me conceptually. But people do tan, thinking primarily like bodybuilders and stuff. The name, that's the thing you don't want, is to look like a crocodile. But he was like pushing into the image, like you're going to have crocodile skin if you come here and tan. This guy was clearly an expert. He was a bodybuilder in his youth. And he tanned a lot himself. He had these machines. He knew how to run them. He gave people really good advice. That's kind of the start of the story. He was arrested for taking pictures of his favorite customers, of course, to satisfy men's desires when he was arrested. He was caught because a woman in her 20s was suspicious while she was using the bed. She heard the curtain open and a shutter clicking. Like, I'm always going to criticize the ability or the thought process of the criminal. You can turn off the shutter sound. Like, you could come up with different cameras. You could get, you could put a hidden camera. You could do something else. You do not take a picture with a camera with a shutter sound. So in Japan, it is illegal to take a picture with your phone, to have your phone, and it doesn't make a noise. And this is all because of the chikan or the upskirt photos, all this other stuff. It's illegal. So you're committing a crime by, if you install an app or do something else or have a phone that doesn't make a sound when you take a picture. I've actually had friends who, when they go overseas, their camera doesn't make a noise, but when they come back, it does. So it's actually like location specific. My phone makes a sound and it's on by default. So I think I can turn it off because it's a Chinese phone. I never actually checked because I don't take any pictures, if we're being really, really honest. But that's not the issue. The issue is in Japan, they considered it such a problem. They made it illegal to have your phone camera not make a noise. But of course, we all know these are things you can turn off. You can get an app to turn it off. You could download a different camera app that doesn't make the sound. I guarantee you could do all that. I haven't even checked, and I know all of those things exist. So I think that's where he went wrong. He wasn't really thinking it through. Yet, he was successful at this for a very, very long time. This lady in her 20s, though, is kind of awesome. She decided, I'm going to set up my own sting operation. So she put her bag at the end of the tanning bed. She set up her phone recording, so it wasn't making a shutter sound, just recording while she was in the tanning bed, so that she has a video of him opening the curtain, sticking the camera out and taking pictures. So she did her own sting and she caught this guy. I mean, 99% of the stories are the guys just doing one really dumb thing, not thinking it through. That's how they get caught. She reported it to the police and the man is arrested. He says he's been doing it for 30 years. So weirdly, incredibly successful. They had 400 pictures on his smartphone when they seized it. So the police arrest him. They're like, give us your smartphone. We know you've been taking pictures with this. They have 400 pictures on there already. That doesn't include like any he's maybe saved to the cloud and he's got on a PC at home. He says he's been doing it for 30 years. There are going to be hundreds, if not thousands of pictures. He was popular with bodybuilders and athletes, and some women were given deep discounts. So I think the deep discounts were so they would keep showing up so he could keep taking pictures of them. They said the owner was known to be skilled and knowledgeable. And another customer, he got a lot of recommendations because he would show them poses with their legs spread and their butt shoved up so you could tan, so the sort of the nether regions. And that's because if you're doing bodybuilding, you don't want like a white splotch when you have on your teeny tiny bikini. So he was like, you get in this position and it will tan evenly in that area. And then he was probably taking pictures of that as well. Crocodile tanning is now temporarily closed.
He is very selective about his photos. One photo per month, only the best one each month.
So this is actually what you've just said is very similar to what I mean. Like you don't, volume is always a problem with crime because volume means you're more likely to get caught. You're more likely to get lazy. So him taking pictures with the shutter sound on, I don't know how he could have gone 30 years with the shutter sound on and not gotten caught. So the fact that it took 30 years already is a bit shocking in itself. If he had taken one picture a month with no shutter sound, I bet he'd still be going. And he just that lack of satisfaction, the desire for more, more, more is always what drives these criminals. Bigger score, more money. Because I'm always thinking, set a limit. I'm going to make 50 million yen on my criminal enterprise. And then I'm going to stop for, let's say, X amount of years until that money runs out. And then I'll do it again. I'll have that cooling off period where I'm not at risk of getting in trouble if they haven't figured out it was me. That seems like the logical way to commit crimes. You want to go for a big score, as few as possible, and then stop for an extended period. They never think
could
that
also
way.
Be the one time he forgot the special app
yeah,
to
it
silence
could be also the
phone.
One time he forgot to use it. It's very true. He could have. Maybe he made a mistake. But again, if he made a mistake, it's because he was getting lazy. He wasn't being conscientious about the criminal enterprise he was doing. And he wasn't being conscientious and caring enough about doing his job properly. And that is Ninja News Japan's news teaching to criminals. I lost that sentence halfway through. I had an idea. I've said this a bunch of times. Is if you're going to commit crime, you know, put the effort in. But I want you to put the effort into everything you do so that you can be the best whatever you are. So if you want to be the best criminal, I want you to be the best criminal. If you're going to be a tanning person, I want you to be the best tanning person. You know, get all the nooks and crannies.